My friend, your role as a father is critical. You are so important. Three nuggets that hit me from my conversation with Mason today are: one, are you projecting your brokenness onto your children? Two, what are possibilities that you're potentially blocking because of the way that you're showing up every day? And three, are you making this thing, whatever this is, it's a sport, it's a conversation, frustration with a kid, are you making it about you? Welcome to Fatherhood Field Notes podcast, where I interview incredible fathers, gaining wisdom from their stories for you and I to grow in our craft. I'm your guide, Ned Chout, father to five kiddos, currently ages 11 to 17, and husband to my rad wife, Sarah, working on our 20th year of marriage. So yep, I'm in the thick of it, and I am working daily to rebel against the low expectations for fathers and create a world where fathers know who they are as they show up for their family. You and I have the greatest opportunity to impact our world through the way we embrace our fatherhood role. This episode is brought to you by The Adventure of Fatherhood, helping men discover their powerful fatherhood role and build their fatherhood skills. The role of the father is to serve, guide, provide, protect, and of course, find joy and have fun in the messiness of it all. Today's guest is my friend, Mason Brandenberger, and I learned so much during our conversation. Enjoy meeting my friend. What is up, my friends? Super pumped to be hanging with my friend Mason. What's up, dude? How you feeling today?
What's up, man? I'm doing well. Glad to be here.
We have shared some good times at Rise Up Kings at some pretty intense events. So shout out to what Rise Up Kings is doing, some transformational stuff. So I know we've been a part of a couple of events that have been life transformational. And so definitely we just want to shout out. That's where you and I connected. So here's my first question for you, Mason. How old do you find yourself today?
Yeah, man, I'm 30 and I find myself at 33, feeling better than I ever have and feeling three.
So you feel like you're exactly where you're supposed to be?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I dig it. How many years you've been married?
I've been married since March 2015. And so we're just coming up on 9 years.
Okay. Sick, dude. Congratulations. And then how many kiddos do you have?
So I have a daughter that's 14 and she spends a week at her mom's house and then a week at our house. Then I also have a little one-year-old. She'll be 2 in June. Liberty is my 14-year-old. Isabel, Izzy for short, is my one-year-old. And then we have a new foster child that's 14 as well. Her and Liberty are just 5 days apart.
Wow.
And so she moved in about 2 months ago. And so between 14-year-olds there and then the one-year-old. Yes, sir.
Cool. And then where do you guys live?
We live in Fort Wayne, Indiana, Northeast Indiana.
Okay. And then I love and hate this question, but I ask it to help men understand that fatherhood's a level playing field. What is it that you do for a living?
Yeah, I own a tree care company. So I'm an arborist and I started the tree care company in college, actually, in the trunk of my 2000 Chevy Malibu. Chainsaw, one rope and one climbing harness. I just went around climbing trees to pay my way through school. And then going through college, it grew more than I anticipated. And I graduated with a bachelor's degree December 2014. I went into tree care full time after that. And we have 20 team members now. And it's been a pretty cool journey together.
Yeah, dude, epic. Love it. Now, you had two different starts for fatherhood, really even three, if you want to consider when the foster parenting started for you, but you're 33 now. So back up 14 years ago, you became a father pretty young. And then you had that season. And then now you got a one-year-old. So now you got 14 years of knowledge and you got a one-year-old. And then at some point you decided to also be a foster parent. So when you think about those kind of three different starts to fatherhood, when did you embrace fatherhood? When did it hit you to go, man, I'm all in on this matters? Was it when you were 18, 19 and found out you're going to be a dad? Was it when you saw your daughter born? Was it a couple years down the road? When you hear that, I embraced fatherhood, when was that for you?
It's a great question. I was the oldest of six kids in my family, but my biological father, he's 100% Greek, and I didn't actually meet him until I was 16 years old.
Wow.
And so my mom, the relationship with him didn't work out. He signed off rights on to me. And so I didn't get to know him at all until I was 16. But my mom got married and I got adopted by my stepfather right around 4 or 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And then there was a 5-year gap between me and my next brother. And then oldest of six kids growing up in that family and really strong family oriented dynamic there. And so that was taught to me as a kid for sure, even though my biological father made those choices to go a different direction.
Right.
It was modeled well by my stepfather. And so I knew what it looked like to just step up as a dad from him. He didn't do a perfect job of it, definitely not, but he did care and he did the best that he could with what he had. And so that was modeled well for me. And due to some dynamics of the house, actually, I was at a private school until sixth grade. And then my mom was very convicted for our family to homeschool, starting in with me in seventh grade. I think homeschooling can be really solid. This is motivated, I think, from really wanting to protect me and protect our family from the world. So I think that she wanted the best for us, but I think a lot of it was some fear-based decision making on she didn't want us to have to go through what she went through in childhood. And there's a lot of protectiveness there. And so I was really shielded off from a lot of the world. And so I really rebelled in some pretty bad way growing up. And so that landed with one thing being getting my girlfriend pregnant as a senior in high school. And so when that happened, it was never a question for me that when I found out she was pregnant, that I was going to be there for my daughter, for the baby, no matter what. That was just never a question that I had in my mind. But that's a pretty early start to fatherhood. Yeah. And so I think embracing just the role of a father, I think it was an auto decision for me. Like I didn't have to think about it. Yet being that early on in life, there's definitely some implications for that as well.
So then what was that conversation like? You get remarried 9 years ago, right? So you had then been married for a good amount of time before you decided to have another child. What were those conversations? What was some of the wrestling that maybe you were feeling like, hey, I've got my daughter, and now you were with your wife for a long time, right? 7 years before you started down that path. But thoughts there, what were some of those conversations you're having with yourself as you think about like men also being in that, maybe they are 25, 26, 27 or 30 and remarried and have a kid from a previous marriage and stuff. What are some of those wrestlings that you go through?
Yeah, man, I think at that season of my life, I was pretty consumed by what was important to me in terms of career and building my company, being successful, accomplishing things that, you know, that I wanted to accomplish. And so I was actually saying that my marriage and family was important to me. And I had my mind tricked that it was, but I really wasn't showing up and backing that up with actions. And so I think it was more of an afterthought. It wasn't that important to me because all I cared about was just achieving and performing. And then also, so there's a dynamic of my wife has a chronic disease that had a pretty substantial impact on her option to have a child together for a number of years. But like early on in the marriage, we knew we wanted to wait a little bit. And then there's the health concerns that came into play for a few years. And then again, me just being really consumed with myself. And so those dynamics, honestly, I didn't put a lot of thought into it, to be real with you.
Yeah, no, this is great. So, but I do want to ask you this, because I think most human beings struggle with identity, especially if they don't know who they are in God, or even if they do, right? Like maybe our father wasn't there for us. So like we have these weird things about what it means to have a dad. And now there's this, you know, this creator and et cetera, et cetera. So it's pretty cool you being 33 years old and you making statements about untying yourself from your identity being tied to achievement and performance. Now, I'm not saying you've got it figured out. And I know that's not what you're saying either, but what was the trigger for you that started you to think about unattaching your identity from your achievements and your performance? I also just want to throw out there, it didn't mean you walked away from being an employer with 20 employees, which I think is great, right? It's not like we sold all our shit and we moved to Africa, which, hey, great story, but you're employing 20 people. You're seeing yourself as your identity is not just that. So how old are you and what was that process? What was the triggers?
Really good question. There's a lot there. I'll give you an overview. You can tell me if you want to dive into it in detail, but I would say it was about a year ago going through the first Rise Up Kings event that I went through, Refinery. That was February. Yeah, man, 3-day event through Rise Up Kings. That was February 2023. And man, honestly, showing up at that event, I thought I had it all together. I thought I was just figuring life out. And I just looked at the world as just the next thing to conquer. And going into that, what happened was there's just so many things that I had been through and mistakes or choices that I'd made or things that had happened to me and all the stuff that I just shoved down and suppressed and just didn't think I ever needed to deal with it because it doesn't matter. I can just form. And so going through that experience, what happened was I saw men that were showing up and they were saying things like the most dangerous man in the room is the one who has nothing to hide. Or they would say a statement like, I am fully known. And I heard him say that and it just struck me, man. I was like, there's a lot of stuff I got to hide, not just from people, but from myself that I just don't even want to deal with in my own heart. And then that fully known component, just seeing them say that and how they were showing up, I knew that was a lot different than the way that I was living. And so I would say like a couple components of that were just seeing those guys show up differently and knowing that there's something that they had that I didn't have. And then just going through that process myself of just recognizing it, becoming fully known and starting to really unpack that and have God transform me in that way.
So if you felt like you were awesome and you rolled into this event like ego, whatever, I'm rad, which dude, that was me 100% when I went. But because you made a statement just now, there wasn't really anything I needed to work on. I didn't need to bring this old stuff to light. What made you go to this event?
Something
underneath there that's, I know I'm awesome, but still. And then like, I'm going to spend a few $1,000, 5 days away from my family. Why would you do that?
And I think it's different for all of us. The way that you showed up, you might have had the pride and ego there, but your answer to that would probably be different than mine. For me, I would say that I knew within my own heart that I really looked like I had it all together. I think that's a better way to put it. Got like it looked like I had it together and that I was building a company and I'd completed some full Ironmans and I'd accomplished some things that were like impressive to some people.
Right.
And from the outside looking in, it seemed like this guy's got it together and he's doing some good things. But in my own heart, man, I knew I was just leaving so much on the table. And I knew that I was not living up to who I could really be. Like there's just stuff that I was burying, stuff that I was suppressing that I just didn't want to deal with. It was limiting me in so many different ways. I mean, so I didn't know exactly what it was because I was so resistant to just going there. But I knew in the depth of my soul, there's more.
You're resistant, but not resistant enough not to go try something.
Not to go try something. But honestly, when I went, I was like, yeah, I'm just going to go through this and learn whatever I can about business and get some connections. And I don't really need to actually unpack anything. I don't actually need to deal with any of this stuff. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
So that was my intent going into it.
Yeah, I think that's similar with whether you're going into something that's business or fitness. I think those are two that draw men in. If I go to this, I'm going to get better at business. If I go to this, I'm going to get better at fitness. And out the gate, you realize that really all the stuff that you really care about. It's like you get men together and they're like, dude, my marriage, I wish it was better. My relationship with my kids, I wish it was better. So those are great hooks to get guys in. But ultimately, we know that it's those belonging, the being known, the not having anything in darkness, and that really brotherhood that we're longing for. What do you believe the role of the father is?
It's a great question. I think that's a really good one for any father to reflect on. For me, I think that the role of a father to me is spiritual leadership, being right at the forefront of that. And I think that within that, really being an example, not a perfect example, but someone that's living it out themselves. And I think the well, there's more is caught than taught. And then I think more is caught than taught.
Yeah.
I think that it's one thing to tell your family or your kids how to do something or that they should be doing something.
Yeah.
And it's a whole different ballgame when you're being that guy. And then they come to you and say, hey, can you explain to me how this is working out in your life or how you're doing that or how you're living that out versus me just trying to tell them they should be doing it. It's a different conversation. And so having them catch on and notice and ask questions about how you're showing up, the way you're showing up or why you're doing the things you're doing. In my experience, that's been 10 times more powerful than trying to talk at them. And then I think provider and protector. And within that, I think that physically, but emotionally, and that's something I'm learning a lot about is the emotional connection with my wife, with my kids. That's something that has been a challenge for me and I've really been leaning into. And then lastly, within the role of a father, I would say unconditional love. Mm-hmm. And that is something that is so much easier said than done, man. That is also something I've been really leaning into a lot.
Oh man, that's beautiful. Okay, something you said at the very beginning of that was the whole caught versus taught thing. And I think we understand the concept of that, but I don't know that all dads are on like a growth trajectory. I think a lot of guys feel like they've paid their dues or like they've arrived, so they're not continuing to learn. So what's something that you were black and white on or a conviction maybe or a belief? And over the course of the 14 years you've been a father, you've shifted on that. You're like, okay, maybe it isn't this way. And you've opened because it's not just Mason Roland, it's Mason plus a couple kids and a wife and split custody. And there's all these things that life brings us. Does anything come to mind that you've shifted belief or adjusted belief around? And if you need an example from me, I'll give you a couple.
I think I know where you're going with that. So something that I shifted belief on that really impacted my growth trajectory of being an example. Is that where you're getting at?
Yeah.
So I think like one specific thing for me would be becoming fully known. So we mentioned that earlier also. And the becoming fully known part for me was that in order for me to become fully known, I had to be willing to go into that dark cave of things that I'd been burying and suppressing. And so some beliefs that I shifted were uncovering the situation with my my biological father that I told you about earlier on, what I realized was the context of him walking away and then me not meeting him until 16, it didn't matter how much I told myself that it's not relevant to me, all that. There was implications there within the depths of my being. And so when I was man enough to go there and actually recognize that, you know what, there probably are implications there. What I realized was I created from that context and reality of my life that there's nothing I could do about that early on in life. But what I realized is I created some lenses in which I was seeing the world. And I thought that I could see the world for what it was, but there are some blurry lenses, man. Like I was still making my way around, but it was not 20/20 vision.
Fathers, quick interruption here. Do you struggle with the sense that you are not stepping into the fullness of your role as a father? Do you regularly wrestle with feeling inadequate as a father? I would love to connect and encourage you over a one-on-one Zoom call. You can grab a time with me at www.rebelandcreate.com/connect. Take a few minutes to talk life, fatherhood, and I will share several resources that will support you on your adventure of fatherhood. Now, back to the conversation.
So I'll give you an example of that. So the context being abandoned and rejected by biological father, I drove myself to perform better so that I could be accepted. Since I wasn't good enough for him, I will be for everyone else.
Yep.
So that's the situation. And the lenses were, I must be respected, valued, accept. My performance defines me. I must be desired or pursued, or I have no value. So that's a belief that I was able to shift, because recognizing that there's so many implications to that, that all of the performance was being driven by my need for acceptance from other people and myself, instead of my value and worth. What it is now and what I'm having God shift and transform me in is my value comes from who God is, who Christ is, who He said I am. And nothing can take that away, not even myself.
Not even myself can take that away. I like it. At the beginning of that, you led by saying, I was man enough to go back and see this. What do you mean by that?
I think that going to those dark places of our life and the things that are really painful for us that we don't want to face, I think it does take a man to really square up to that and be willing to dig in and be willing to say, you know what, it's painful and it's something that I've suppressed, whether that's the situation I was explaining there from childhood or whether it's just mistakes we've made and things that we've been dishonest about that no one else knows about. There's things in life that I've just told myself, I'm never going to need to think about that again. And so I think being man enough is saying like, no, I'm not just going to ignore that or act like it doesn't matter. I'm actually going to go there and I'm going to see like, why am I the way that I am? Mm-hmm. Like, why did I make these decisions? Why did I take like that situation with my father and how has that affected me on life? And just being willing to go there and examine it and just sit in that pain.
Now, what's the balance of going on a personal journey like that and being all consumed with your own personal development and where you're, I don't want to say, oh, poor me, victim, whatever, and I'm just doing me and missing out on the opportunity to pour into your family at the same time? Where's that balance or connection for you when you hear that?
Yeah. I think the balance for me is the aim behind it.
Okay.
So before, it was all about me being successful and accomplishing enough things so I could justify my existence and make myself feel good, basically. And now, like the digging in and on better understanding myself and the growth that I want to experience and the transformation that I want God to continue doing in my heart, it's a different aim behind it. It's not about me anymore.
Ah, that's great. And so it's almost coming back to the achievement and performance was about you, the knowing who you are now, this identity piece. I'm sure the wrestle's still there, but the work you're doing is now not about more achievement for your own personal self-greatness, but for those that have been placed in your care, right?
Yeah, man. There's a scripture passage. I don't have the reference off the top of my head, but it says that you seek the Lord and you will find him when you seek him with your whole heart. And so for me, I'm recognizing that in order for me to seek the Lord with my whole heart, I need to deal with the things that divide my heart.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
And so that's an example of being willing to dig in and being willing to go there. And the reason that's important, it's not just selfish, it's because that's stuff that divides my heart. And so when I deal with that, I can be more whole between God and I, and then I could show up better for everyone else around me.
Yeah, that's good. I think people don't realize that if you just want to use this idea of heart, right? It's so funny because we're such like a factual society, but we all know what you mean. But it's not really in your heart, right? There's something else going on inside us. Like, we're souls. There's more to this than so. When we take these things and we bury them and we put them in darkness, like, we're hiding it. So our whole heart, for example, there's a dark part of my heart where there's some things hidden that I don't want anyone to know about. But if I open that up and become fully known, there's light that opens up, right? So then it opens. It's not captive. I want to ask you this question, and you may have already answered it, but let's just see. What have you learned about yourself and being a father? So as it relates to being a dad to your daughter who's 14, to your one-year-old, to foster children, what have you learned about Mason?
What I've learned about myself is, I think one really substantial thing is that as a father, I project my brokenness onto my kids.
Where did you hear this, or where did you find this?
Yeah, man. In a lot of different ways that I've just messed up and not chosen to lead well. Some examples that I'll give you are when my daughter had her first boyfriend and she was like totally afraid for me to find out. She just didn't think I was going to be cool with it. And so when I did find out and I talked to her about it, what happened was like I totally took it personal. And I was like, she lied to me about it. And
about you.
Dude, I made it all about me. Mm. And that actually created this pretty deep wound in our relationship that we're still working through today. And that was a few years ago now. And we're still unpacking that reality of not just that scenario, but that's like an example of a lot of different ways in which, like, I didn't scream at her and freak out on her, but I really made her feel I was hurting because I felt like she had been dishonest to me. And I was taking it personal because of the brokenness within me. And so subconsciously, I wanted her to feel that pain.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't like a physical abuse or screaming at her or anything, but it was me coming and just showing up as this disappointed dad that needed to make sure that she knew how terrible that was and how would she feel if I would lie to her about that. It's just messed up, twisted, all this brokenness that I hadn't dealt with inside of me is how I was taking that personal and then just projected right out on her.
Mason, when you said that, we had this pause because I felt like this was such an enlightening moment and statement that you made. We make this comment, and I think it probably comes more from like the Christian world of generational curses, right? We're working to break generational curses, or this has been passed down from my family for whatever. And I'm not saying it's not true, but I think sometimes there might be this disconnect from that. But when you say the words, or if I ask myself, am I projecting my own brokenness onto my children? I think that's where this idea of passing the shit from one generation to the next is that if you never work on your stuff, you're gonna project it on, because we're selfish human, we're selfish beings. If I can work on my stuff, then I'm not gonna project that on my kids, which then isn't gonna get passed again. And somebody said this great statement. I did not make this up. It's probably some psychological whatever. Okay, you are either transformed, your brokenness, and they use a different word, but your stuff is either transformed, like you choose to transform it, or you transfer it. So Mason and Ned can choose to go down the path of transformation and deal with whatever. If we don't, it will be transferred to your kids.
Yeah, that's good.
So same kind of concept. It's a simple question. Are you projecting your brokenness onto your kids? Are you making this about you? And it could be in some situations.
100%, man. And for me, I think I know when I'm projecting my brokenness on them by what's coming up within me. If I'm feeling like overly upset or insecure or like taking it personal, feeling like hurt about the way that she's showing up, like I'm starting to recognize like, man, that's stemming from a place where I haven't healed. Mm-hmm. And so then I'm taking that and wanting her to feel that same pain instead of me being in a place where I've been able to walk through that, heal from it. And then in the relationship with my daughter, the crazy thing is, man, because I've been on this journey really intentionally for the last year to dig into these things and to really ask God to heal those broken places of my heart. And the beautiful thing about it is when God makes that transformation on your heart, the transfer gets eliminated and it's not through effort.
Yeah.
That's the beautiful part of it to me.
Yeah. It's like, and that piece is key because I think what many of us are looking for is we're looking for the right hack or daily habit or discipline. And those are all things. Those things are great. But if I wake up at 4 a.m. every day and journal, that discipline alone isn't going to transform my heart. It's a part of it, but it's not the thing. And I think that was a big realization for me this year is discipline and transformation are two different things. You need discipline for transformation, but ultimately for you and I, we realize I can't meditate enough to not be a sack of shit. I could do it for 30 days in a row and just eat shit. But then if I'm not having somewhere to take and express that, and for us, we know who we are, this creator of the universe, right? Like I can go to God and I'm not just caring, smiling in the face of my wife thinking I suck. And then I blow up in 30 days or 60 mm-hmm. days, right? Because mm-hmm. we're like, hey, I did great for 25 days. And then I just lost my shit on my family. That's mm-hmm. being really good at being disciplined for 25 days, right? Yeah. Unless you look back over 5 years and you're seeing change. Now, I want to bring something else up, because I do think it's easy for you and I as men to go, I went and met with God this morning and we're on this stuff and he's transforming my life. But there's something you did right before this podcast, which I find enormous, is you were spending some time with your 14-year-old daughter and you asked her two questions. Mm-hmm. And I think that this brings it into reality of, hey, if I want to transform, I'm also having people speak into my life. What were those two questions you asked her?
So can I say one more thing about what we were just talking about too, before I tell you that? Yeah, I'd love to. So this is something that you and I learned together through one of the events that we went to. Mm-hmm. And I think it just speaks to that idea of being able to show up different, not from an effort standpoint. And I just want to paint the picture real mm-hmm. quick. So if you picture up at the top, you have your belief systems. Within your belief systems, you have your identity, which mm-hmm. is internal. Then you have your worldview, which is external. That's how you see the world. And then your values are kind of how you separate those two things, your identity and worldview. So that's all in your belief systems. Then after your belief systems comes your aim. And then after your aim is your mode of operating, all of that stuff being subconscious. So then after that comes thinking, emotions, behaviors, and life result. And so what I was focusing on for so many years is, man, I don't like my result. Let me just try a little harder with behaviors, or let me do some positive thinking or make myself feel better. And then like you said, it's 30 days of maybe moving in a better direction, all to come back to the exact same results eventually. And so that deep work of looking at the belief systems and the aim and mode of operating and digging into those parts of our life that are painful and having the healing, the transformation occur, then all of a sudden the thinking, emotions, behaviors, like those start to flow out of that, who you're mm-hmm. becoming, and then you produce different results in it, not because you're trying harder.
Yeah, dude, it's hard work. And the word that comes to mind, because when I say work, I feel like do, what do I do? But it's a mm-hmm. balance of do and surrender.
Yeah, man, you got to have the humility to say, I don't have this figured out. Just open up your mind to the possibilities. I think that's the starting point. And it's not easy to do that, man. That's so much easier said than done, especially when it involves going to those dark places of things that have happened to you that are painful, that you don't want to deal with, things that you've done that you don't want to think about. Like, that is difficult. And so having the humility to step into that and then having the strength to persevere through it. Yeah, man, that doesn't just happen.
Yeah.
Like, you got to dig in.
That's good. So tell me those two questions you asked her before you came
up. Yeah, I was talking to Liberty before jumping on this podcast, and we like to do a date together. She spends a week with us and then a week at her mom's house. So every week that she's with us, so we like to go on a date together. And so we were hanging out and I just asked her a couple of questions. One was, what are the ways in which I've not served you well, not led you well, shown mm-hmm. up and have just projected my brokenness onto you, basically? Yeah, yeah. I was just curious what she'd have to say about that. And then the second question was,
what did she say?
What did she say about that one? Okay.
Yeah.
So what she was saying about that is she did bring up that disappointed dad situation with the boyfriend for sure. Yeah. Me taking it personal. And that was a pretty deep wound early on. And then another thing she said was timing for conversations. I'm like this pretty intense, like deep thinker sometimes.
Yep.
And so I'll just dive into these conversations at some of the worst times. And I'm just not reading the room. I'm just like, I want to talk about this. Important thing. I need to be a good dad and go there. And it turns into totally checked out from her end. This goes for my wife as well.
Okay. The problem that I have is I'm like, I get this idea in my head. And then I'm like, I can't stop thinking about it until I get it out. And then as soon as it's out, I'm free from the thought. Everyone mm-hmm. around me is now, dude, what is like almost bedtime, or like we're supposed to walk into church now or whatever. Right. So I just resonate deeply with that. And I'm sure most dudes do. Anything else?
And then one more thing.
Some attention? Yeah.
So she said timing. And then she also said that not trying to mold kids or myself like into a person that you want them to be. Like, let me be my own person. So that was a big one, is because I had this picture of who I thought she needed to be. And so whenever she was outside of that, I wasn't able to accept her for who she wanted to be and who she was, and just allow her to make mistakes, because I was just so set on thinking that she just needed to be this version of herself that I thought she needed to be.
Let me ask you that though. Okay, so I totally resonate with one, get it. Resonate with two, get it.
Yep.
What do you think about three? So what is your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because you know what I followed up with when she told me that?
Yeah.
Exactly what you just said. I was like, okay, so how do I balance that with leading you to wisdom and being a father that cares about you, loves you, and guides you towards wisdom, yet still allows you to be your own person? I respect that, but I think I have a responsibility in this. So what do I do with that?
Yeah.
That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, totally.
I'm with you. And so she gave me an answer, which is awesome. And I love the questions to Liberty and her responses, because these are like dad cheat codes, man.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. So what she said was, it's really about the communication, and it's about the teaching her how to be wise and leading her in that way, but giving her room to mess up and not take it personal.
Okay. So I can then respect that. Mm-hmm. I can respect her answer. And dude, super wise, 14 years old. So it's like you and I are dudes and we're dads. And then we're talking about a 14-year-old who, because I have two 14-year-olds right now. Well, you do too. And they think they know everything about everything. And so it's finding that balance. But what I like is that although you may walk away with some different opinions, meaning like, I'm not going to stop trying to cultivate the truth about who you are, but it doesn't sound like in the moment you just justified your action. Because you asked her to be vulnerable and she was vulnerable. And then we share this, instead of you justifying, I'm your dad and I'm your leader and you're a 14-year-old girl, you asked another question like, okay, how would I do that? And then her answer was pretty remarkable. Just give me a little bit more space to fail. And then when I fail, be a guide to me.
And I would add to that, go for the heart, not the behaviors.
My friends, sorry for this quick interruption. However, somewhat sadly, I get more questions from dudes about fitness than I do about fatherhood. But what I found is that the fathers who start taking care of their fitness and nutrition end up finding fatherhood, marriage, work, and all other aspects of life come into a deeper clarity of purpose, enjoyment, and fulfillment. Now, I've partnered with Rise Up Kings to launch Ruck Fitness, a transformative program that is less focused on a six-pack in 90 days and more focused on you creating the habits, mindset, and lifestyle that will allow you to be a healthy asset to your family for decades. Come join me in a transformative journey to become the man you want to see in the mirror. Go check it out, www.rebelandcreate.com/fitness. Now back to the show. Okay, yeah. And that comes back to the even what you talked about yourself is what's your aim. Mm. So if you can come to your kids and go, hey, what was your aim in this? What's the aim here? I think that's powerful, because then again, we're talking about heart, like you're talking about heart issues. Where are you being led with your heart? What are you allowing in and out of your heart?
And with the aim being the heart, how I've seen my approach change is, like what I was doing previously is I would feel like she needed to learn this lesson and I needed to teach her this thing, whatever. And it could have been totally right. And it could have been something really profound and great. But guess what? Yeah. If she's checking out, it doesn't matter, dude. And so going for the heart means you're present and you're recognizing where she's at and you're giving her an opportunity to feel heard. I have completely bombed that for so long, because even when she would talk, I was so convinced on what she needed to be doing and, the outcome, I was completely blocking off possibilities, man.
Oh, blocking possibilities. That's really good. And what's interesting is when, hang on, let me write this down, possibilities. What's interesting is when you said what's the aim, and I think, I don't know if you meant this or not, but I was thinking about the aim of the kid's action, which I think is true. Liberty, what was your aim? But then as you continue to talk, it's also what's the aim of Mason as he's talking to her? Is it creating this ideal reflection of the Brandenburger family? Or is it my aim is to be a guide to my kid and help them learn in this situation?
Yes, absolutely, man. Yeah. And when my daughter and when my wife and when my family is struggling, I always told myself that, man, I really see potential in people and I really like care about people so much. And a lot of times I want it more than they do. This is the old story that I told myself. And what I've recognized is like the truth is when they're struggling, my life is worse. And so I need to fix them so that my life will be better.
And I feel like I fall into that a lot. And then I think sometimes that's because I haven't created enough margin in my life. Your shit is getting in the way of my agenda, and that I'm missing the point of what I'm here as the guide for. Okay, dude, I have a couple last questions, but before I ask, what were a couple of the wins she shared? The second question was like, where am I?
Yeah, how have you seen improvement?
What'd she say? Mm-hmm.
She said making more time to hang out. And she made the comment, if you want your kid to share things, spend time listening, like actually hearing them. You can't expect for them to open up and share things. And she was saying that about herself. Can't expect me to open up and just share deep things with you if you're not spending the time with me. And even if you are spending the time with me, if I'm not feeling heard and I'm just shutting off the possibilities because I have this preconceived notion of how the conversation needs to go. So it's the time and it's feeling heard. And then the other thing that she said was, I thought this was pretty cool. I actually asked her, what's the main thing that comes to mind if you were just to say one thing that's made the biggest difference and that you've seen a change in me? And she said, having fun in public and at home and not having like a difference between who you are out in public with everyone else and in at home. And I was like, man, that's really interesting. Like, what was I doing that made you feel like I wasn't the same person? And she was like, she couldn't really put her finger on it, but she was like, it just seemed you were telling me to be the same person, whether I'm at our house or mom's house or wherever I'm at, but it just didn't seem like you were being the same person everywhere that you were. And I thought that's pretty good stuff. Just told me that.
If you think if every dude could have just that conversation you had with your daughter, with their 10-year-old daughter, right? Coming into womanhood. Oh my gosh, bro, our world would look different. That's the stuff, right? Like, it doesn't matter. That is the stuff. It doesn't matter where you are, what you're doing, but to be able to have a conversation like that with your 14-year-old daughter is so incredible, dude. So freaking kudos to you, man. So inspiring. All right, here's my last two questions for you as we wrap up. Rebel and create. So the podcast is called Fatherhood Field Notes. You're doing it, just opening up your field notes for us, but the mantra is rebel and create, and you know what it means, and so do the listeners. But what is it that you are rebelling against, and what do you hope to create out of that rebellion?
Yeah, man. So I'm rebelling against pride and ego. And that's something that I really spoke to in being willing to have the humility to go into those places and to be able to recognize, why am I the way that I am? And how can I lean into those things instead of run away from them? How can I use the things that I've been through instead of those things using me? How can I turn my mess into my message? Mm-hmm. And so just facing pride and ego and rebelling against that crap, that's definitely a big part of it for me. And then what I want to create from that is I want to create more possibility in my life and more strength with the power of the Holy Spirit in me. And so I want to create through God's power, transforming my heart. Like, I want to be a new version of myself that shows up different than I did before. So the vision that I have for the man that I want to become in 2024, I spent some time on it, dude. I've been digging into it and I'm really clear on the man that I want to become in 2024. And it looks a lot different than the man I am today. And so that is something that really drives me, because I want to be a better husband, better father, better leader. I have a lot of areas to grow in, and just getting really clear on what that looks like. I want to create those possibilities by allowing God to transform me in deeper ways.
Beautiful, man. And I think that easily leads me to my last question. It's a legacy question. Imagine 30 years from now, you're standing in a cul-de-sac, peering into your daughter's homes. What is it that you see being played out that puts a big old smile on your face and go, okay, dude, Mason showed up? What do you see inside of those homes?
I think the legacy portion for me is like being healed in those places and being able to connect emotionally with my daughter, with my family, having God transform my heart in that way and showing up different, again, not from a result of effort. What I want that to result in is a legacy of a father and a man that was just showed up in life, set ablaze with the power of the Holy Spirit in my life. My prayer really is, Father, give me some great thing to do and I'll give up everything to do it. I want to say, look at what Jesus did for me. I want my life to count. I want to make a difference. I want to change the world. And so for me, God is really stirring inside of me, like a deeper conviction and power of his Spirit, man. And I know who he created me to be. And I know that he sees Christ in me, not my brokenness. And so, dude, I know what I'm living for. I know what I'm about to do. The whole army is standing before me, brother.
And I'll tell you, there is an army standing before you, right? The whole army of people that want your daughter's attention. And I'm just going going to use your daughter as an example. They want her allegiance to whatever mediocrity the world wants to provide. And I think I just really want dads to hear this. I'm all about if there's something out there, right? I pursue the same thing. I'm working on some books or whatever, but I can never let that thing become the thing that replaces me having a date with my 14-year-old. Like, I'm leaving in an hour and 15 minutes to take my 17-year-old. We're going to go to the gym and then we're going to go get a smoothie. And so I don't want this passion on fire for fatherhood to replace that time that you and I are spending with our daughters. To me, that is the purpose. That is the primary. If I'm standing before God and he's, dude, when you had that, Mason, when you had that conversation with your daughter, it literally changed generations. Versus you spoke at that stadium and there was 10,000 men there. That's good. But the conversation with a 14-year-old girl who is going to school and split custody, like all the things, dude, that's the power, bro. That's your and I's number one calling. And every dude listening on here, that's the calling. And I lean into that because if I'm at church and they bring the missionary on stage, that's great. It's great. Mm-hmm. But are we bringing on the arborist who has 20 employees who's, hey, we really want to celebrate Mason this week because Mason's giving 20 people jobs in our community and does really good work at people's houses and doesn't rip off old people and is helping keep this church alive. Dude, yes, I don't want that arborist or whatever he's doing to be sitting there feeling, man, should I have been a missionary in Africa? Dude, no, you're doing what you're supposed to do. You're showing up for your family, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, I've got a little bit of a soapbox here.
I hear you though. And what I'm hearing is just the difference of doing versus being.
Yes, be the guy. Yeah. I'm 100% in this with you. Be the guy. Go ahead.
It's not about what you're doing. It's about who you're becoming, man. You did a podcast with Dan Cicchini recently. Dude, he's such a legend, bro. Dude. I love that guy. And you guys got into something that was like, it's a wrong question.
Oh, when he hit me with that?
It's a who question. Mm. And it was so good, man. Yeah. This isn't about the fatherhood thing. This life isn't about what we need to do. Be good enough and to leave a legacy. It's who do we need to be? That's a different ballgame.
So I just want to say one last thing on that because it's coming to my mind a few times when you said that this life isn't about. I love the idea of becoming, right? Like I'm all about it. Like I want to become a better version of myself and blah, 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 blah. Like I'm about it. I get it. But as your daughter said that she's seen you become more authentic, that's essentially what she said. I almost think it's not just that you and I are becoming this better version of ourselves. It's that we're choosing to cut the bullshit out of our lives so that the authentic, true Mason and Ned can arrive. Not even arrive, but be seen more. So it's like he's already here. He's already in us, but the brokenness and there's the ego and there's the pride and there's the selfishness. Yep. And it's not just that I'm becoming him when I choose to cut off those old things that aren't serving me or those around me. And so he's already here, right? I think of the statue of David. He's inside there. It's just there's all these little chips and edges that need to come off. And that's going to just take decades of time.
And just being, though, each day and in each moment, not getting, have a vision.
Yeah.
Leave a legacy, all of it. And in the moment, be who you are. Like you said, the authenticity is a big deal because wearing the masks and like needing to look good and all these different things, people pleaser, all these masks. What happens is you don't get the real world feedback because you're putting on masks. When you show up authentic, like what you just described, you get feedback on who you really are. And you can take that and then you can choose like, what's the truth in that? Okay. Let me move forward. And so I think it is just being authentic in the moment. Yes, having a vision, but I also think that not losing sight of the value of being who you are today.
Okay. And here's the thing though, as you say that, the vision that you have isn't somebody else. It's not, I want to be a mixture of Mark Wahlberg.
Sure.
The vision is if you look inside of who you are, you do have a dream or a vision of who Mason is and who Ned is. So this vision isn't outside somewhere else. This vision is already in you. It's this authentic, true soul version of you. And I believe that our lifetime is us learning who that person is if we don't get stuck in our ways, which is one of the reasons why I asked that earlier question. I don't want to be the 40-year-old dad or the 80-year-old grandpa who's so stuck in his ways. Don't get me wrong. I want to have standards of truth, but that I'm not open to God moving and working in my life. Dude, we could keep rapping forever.
We could, yeah.
Mason, thank you for your time. Thank you for the work you've done on yourself. Thank you for the way you're showing up for your daughters, for other children, for your wife, the work and effort that you put into that wrestling of being, not doing. I just encourage you to keep doing that. We need more men like you. You're an incredible father, friend, and leader, and just keep on this path. Much love to you and blessings to your family.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that. Thanks so much.
What an incredible conversation. The thing that really stuck out to me, there were so many things, but ultimately this idea of, are you allowing your brokenness, your frustration, your overwork, are you allowing these things to hinder your relationship and your connection with your kids? And especially that piece of my brokenness is me not dealing with my past, my story, maybe some frustration around where I sit with my health or my job or wherever I might find myself in life. Am I allowing those things to dictate the way that I'm speaking to and treating my children? Critical to consider that. My friends, if you are enjoying this podcast and it's helping you along your own fatherhood journey, please write a review. It helps spread the word that fatherhood matters. Thank you to all you dads out there listening to Fatherhood Field Notes podcast. What you do matters. Don't be like everybody else. Be yourself. That is who your kids, spouse, and community needs. This is your guide, Ned Schaut. Together, let's rebel against the view that fatherhood has little impact and create lives engaged in mastering the craft of fatherhood. I look forward to hanging out with you next time.